This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This is the Besotted Pride of West London podcast, and season's greetings to you. Merry Christmas, happy holidays. For all the phrases out there, just to make you feel totally welcome in this festive period as well. My name's Billy Grant, and I'm sitting here from the Christmassy virtual joint. We're sitting there after Christmas, actually, after eating lots of whatever you eat at Christmas. I know there's lots of turkey and pies and all sorts of stuff. I had a curry on Christmas Day. I had my Christmas dinner, or traditional Christmas dinner, the day before, the Scandinavian day on Christmas Eve. And then I went out for a curry on Christmas Day, as you do, into the East End. And it was very nice indeed. And I was very happy. And I had my Brentford crackers there with all the questions coming out. You know, who scored the goal against Blackburn in 1989? Of course, I was right in there with the answers, like, you know what I'm saying. So, yeah, we had a bit of a Christmassy Brentford curry in town. And it was very busy as well. Lainey, how are you?
I'm good. Happy Christmas, everyone. Yeah, really good. Got fighting a bit of a cold, but I had a really good day yesterday with my family. Looking forward to a bit of football today. Going to see a bit of non-league a little bit later on, as our team don't play till tomorrow, the day after Boxing Day. So it gives us an extra couple of days for our players to get vaguely fit, because we're down to the bare bones. So it's been a Brentford-free Christmas period, but full of festive fun, Bill. So yeah, looking forward to tomorrow though.
Definitely full of festive fun. I'll tell you something as well. I'm actually really, there's a lot of people a bit gutted because in a way, as you know, I was, instead of sitting there watching a game, instead of planning our trip up to Manchester, as we should have been doing last Saturday, because Manchester City decided to go and take the money in Saudi Arabia instead. So they forsake a game, you know, our game was none, you know. So, and people laugh about the things that you do, but I ended up in the shed with Cartel B, there in the Cartel B, building in the garden, building a shed, you know, with the old computer in the shed that we were building, watching whatever Premier League game that we could find, like, you know what I'm saying. So I was actually watching Bournemouth versus Nottingham Forest, as you do, from the shed that was being built in the garden as well. So, and it's funny because you still have to find your football fix in some way, and I could have gone off to maybe a non-league game that day, but I decided actually to do my B&Q duties, get the shit up and running with the Cartel B, and watch the Premier League games as well. But you're getting your fix today, aren't you, Lainey?
Yeah. I'm going to go wandering and going to go and see Chertsey Town today, actually. I think I'm going to see them. They're top of their league. It's a good little ground down there. There's a few Brentford there. Lots of Premiership teams and other clubs, like you see in non-league. You know, everyone's got a second team. But yeah, I've been down there a few times and it's good. Yeah, so I'll go there, take my nephew and my brother-in-law, and we'll have a couple of drinks, and all is good. It's like a non-pressured football experience, you know what I mean? I hope they do win, but it doesn't upset me too much if they don't. So loyal. But tomorrow's a different kettle of fish.
Definitely kettle of fish. And talk about your nephew as well. I've actually just booked my tickets to Frankfurt to and from, me into puns and soups and all that lot. We've been booking trains and planes and automobiles to and from Germany, which is a separate issue as well. But it's quite good, the things that you do in and around Christmas, but looking forward as well. So I've got all sorts of Eurostar journeys taking place. And yes, Frankfurt, which is where your nephew lives, is actually well and truly on the cards, Lainey. So I've put my flight back from Frankfurt. I've put my train back out to Cologne and all sorts of stuff. And it's working out quite relatively reasonable as well. If you're looking at all the travel that takes place, I'm actually looking forward to it very much. So we might have to get the cards out, the Kings of the Corner again, Lainey. Kings of the Corner.
I'm sure I'll be there as well. I'm not quite as organised as you, but I'll be there.
That's right. I mean, but the kids come out as well. There's a weekend game as well, which is going to be the 16s. Not to say I'm counting my chickens before they're hatched, but England are going to get through the 16s, the first knockout stage. So I've got the kids coming out as well for that one as well. So there's going to be plenty of Eurostar action going on. Like, you know, we've got the cards and a few little drinks coming out and stuff. So I'm looking forward to that already.
It's a big football new year, isn't it? I mean, you know, we're looking forward to Ivan Toney coming back into the new year. We've got a couple of games. We've got Wolves and we've got Palace away. Then hopefully we've got the January transfer window, which will iron out a few of our kind of frailties. We've got a lot of players coming back from injury. You know, it's good to see Kevin Sharder back on grass. Brian and Bumo's probably a little bit longer than that. And obviously Rico and Hickey are longer than that. Christopher Ayer should be out. Well, we got Jensen, he's back in contention for the Wolves game. So it's good. I just think we're going to have a little bit more of a kind of A team look about us rather than a B team look about us, which we have the last couple of games. So yeah, it's there's a lot to look forward to in the new year, including the England in the Euros, mate. So yeah. A big 2024.
Indeed, and talking about looking forward to, I know we've got the Palace game. We're going to try and get a podcast out before the Palace game as well. But as you know, we sometimes find booze. We actually pre prepped you with a little boozer for the Sheffield match, which was really good because it was actually really busy. There's loads of bees inside there, so thanks for coming down. And that was good to meet the bees. Somewhere for Palace as well, which is quite a hard away game. So maybe, like I said, you get in touch with us and we'll let you know. We've got a little secret squirrel for the Palace game because it's very, very hard. But anyway, we shall move on because, tell you something, forget about Palace, forget about crystals, forget about sort of jewellery, forget about all that stuff. Let's come back to Villa, right? Okay, because we played Villa, okay, before the Christmas period. And it didn't go according to plan. We're going to go away, have a little drink, a little bit of a Christmas drink. Maybe I might have a little port, one of Lainey's ports that he bought. And then I'll come back and we'll talk about Villa. Aston Villa came to New Griffin Park, as we call it. I know some people aren't happy with us calling it that. But for me, I'm going to explain the reason why. Okay, I believe in history. Yeah, this is me personally, you know what I'm saying? And the fact is, I see that sometimes when clubs brand, right, their grounds with a corporate sponsor, and then when that corporate sponsor moves on, that brand loses its identity because it's got no name. So I like when there's a name associated and you can put the sponsor in there, but if it's got no name to it and the sponsor moves on, it loses its identity. And it's interesting, the Emirates has become the Emirates forever because basically Emirates can never leave Arsenal, because if it doesn't, then they just have no name. You know what I'm saying? But there's other clubs that you've seen them, you've got the BGM Stadium that turns into the Halifax Stadium, turns into something else, and it just keeps on just changing its name all the time. And for me, I just think, listen, marketing people have to be a little bit cleverer as to how to retain a club's identity so that that ground is always the ground, but also the sponsor kind of comes in. Because when that sponsor goes, then they go, no, they're happy with the club. But after 6 or 7 years, it doesn't fit in with their marketing policy anymore, and they move.
Yeah, I'm happy with GTEC though. You know, I'm really not happy with Brentford Community Stadium. I think it's an honourable name, but I don't, you know, it's not a good name for a new stadium. And when GTEC come along, and I know it's a long-term deal, it's all right. But we've been calling it New Griffin Park since it was being built. You know, so you know, it's a bit whatever. I know it's not worth getting angry about anyway. I know.
I'm absolutely not getting angry at all. We're sitting there with our port in Christmas, and like Brentford sitting in 14th position, so we're not happy, angry at all. But I just thought we'll explain our position here as well, Lainey, and everyone each to their own. And
I call it GTEC more than you do, but I'm happy to call it New Griffin Park as well. It's just like, it's a bit whatever, isn't it?
But anyway, so we should move on. But like I said to you, things didn't go too well down at New Griffin Park on Saturday. It's actually over a week ago, because like I said, we had no games before that. And the reason why is, Aston Villa come down. And I know I've got lots of Aston Villa mates. They're really scared of playing Brentford. They've only beaten us a couple of times in the last I don't know, loads of times that we've met since we've been in the Championship. I think they beat us one when we were in the Championship, and they also beat us, they smashed us last season as well. But other than that, we've kind of, you know, we've given them a right good seeing to, and they were not very happy with us at all, because they expected, interestingly, when Villa first came down to the Championship, they're the proper arrogant ones. They're the ones that had never been out the Premier League, and they're like, yeah, we're going to come down there, smash everybody, go back up the Premier League. Years later, they were still languishing in the Championship, and they were getting beaten like teams like Brentford. And I remember there was a early days, there was almost like a little bit of beef going on, because we had all these people that were like really upset that we were kind of beating them all the time, and they were just kind of going, who's this tin pot team? And I remember that those early days of the Championship, or middling days, sort of 2016, 17, I think, like that. And it was quite interesting. And then I thought that the Villa fans had started to kind of get to sort of realise, you know, their position, and realise that they weren't the big team they were anymore, and they started to get a little bit more humble. And so we'd enjoyed going out to Villa, because it was cool chatting to them. We got our Villa chums and everything like that. It's interesting though now, because we're playing Villa and they're like kind of in the European places, and they've gone out into Europe as well. And I think some of their fans are getting a little bit ahead of themselves, aren't they?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think their fans had become a little bit more kind of submissive to their kind of like fallen from grace, you know, the Championship years had kind of diluted. I mean, they are a huge club, let's be honest with you. You know, Birmingham's the second city, they're the biggest club in Birmingham. Birmingham City will hate that, but it's just a fact. Their history is second to few. You know, they've won the first division, the top flight, up there with the best. They've won the European Cup even more times than Leeds, and they are a colossus. You know, stadium is stunning. I really got a lot of respect and a lot of admiration for Aston Villa Football Club. And as you said, I've got a lot of books that I've published about Villa. I've got more coming, and you know, I've read the history, and published the first part of the 150 year book. It's up there with the best thing they've ever published, because it's so rich in stories, and just it's a great book and a great history. And we've been beating them regularly, so you know, it's kind of like, well, blimey, you know, it shows you how much we've changed in the last 10 years. I got a sense that their swagger's coming back now. They're winning a lot of games. Riding high in the Prem. They're still in Europe. Their team had been looking really good. I was expecting more from Aston Villa, if I'm honest with you, when they came to GTEC a couple of weeks ago. They found themselves playing against a really makeshift kind of second rate, if that's not too much of an insult to some of our players, Brentford team. We were cobbled together, but my God, we put up a fight, you know, to go ahead. You know, KLP got a really good goal, took it well, you know, seized it, controlled it and shot in the same movement. And Emi Martinez didn't really get a look at that. But at that time, there was no kind of indication about how the game was going to change. And it flipped really on Bemi sending off, you know, getting sent off for a reckless challenge so far up the pitch, just outside, you know, the not his own defensive penalty area, but the offensive penalty area was you don't really want to be. If you can get sent off on the pitch, it's not there as a defender. But you can understand why he made the challenge. We were just giving our all, and with 11 men on the pitch, our all may have been just enough to get 3 points. But with 10 men on the pitch, it seemed to be inevitable that they were going to start creating chances. But I expected more from Aston Villa before they scored. I certainly expected more from Aston Villa after they scored in terms of their behaviour, and I certainly expected more from Ollie Watkins, or Wally Otkins as I'm going to start calling him, because he really did let himself down, and I felt he's well, not only jeopardised, but I think he's ruined a lot of goodwill that he had with Brentford fans. So yeah, his celebration after scoring the winning goal was at the very least ill-judged, and at the very most just recklessly sad, because you don't, you know, we've shared a lot of love with Ollie, and we've taken pride in how his career's kicked on. It's almost like, you know, that's the model for if you are gonna leave Brentford and go on and play for England and go to a hashtag bigger club, then you do it that way. And he's undone that, as far as I'm concerned, Bill.
Yeah, I mean, you've had your little say there. Let's go to the fans, hear what they had to say about the game and about Ollie Watkins's activity after the match.
The refereeing was just abysmal, just abysmal. Every little decision. He lost control after an hour, and everything that happened afterwards was down to him. Very sad the way the Watkins game did, but whatever abuse he got, standing in the net and giving it large to your fans like that, or his old fans, isn't going to go down well, is it? I'm sure, knowing the bloke, he'll be gutted with that, but then he ought to think about his reactions. But loads to be happy about in terms of the performance. You know, none of us expect us probably to be that competitive today against a decent team, but bloody hell, they're unlikable, eh? I didn't realise they were quite as unlikable as that.
It was a red card to Ben Mee on reflection, looking at what came up on the big screen. Yeah, he did go over the top, that was a red card. But the rest of the yellows, disappointed in Villa. Villa are a better team, and to keep throwing themselves around the pitch, and really is a bit sad.
It's so quick that you can lose the respect of thousands of people that love you and are so proud of what you're doing, and then all in an instant it's all gone. But I mean, that game was a game of bad refereeing. That is not a game of football. You're watching a game of drama at the end of it, and it just shows that the importance of discipline. You'd think Aston Villa would be happy and just enjoying the decisions that they think are going their way, but the fact that they're getting riled up means they have no respect for the referee. So you've got two teams, neither of them have any respect going on for each other, for the authority that's out there, and you can see it's just absolute carnage for the last 25 minutes of the game.
What a great game, until the ref ruined it. And I was so frustrated. I used to moan about these northern sides coming here and just diving everywhere, but now they're West Midlands sides, and I really didn't like it. It was very, very annoying. But I think, as you said, we came in this expecting nothing, but we played a really, really good game and deserved something out of that game. I don't think Aston Villa deserved a win at all.
It was actually quite an enjoyable game of football, end to end, really open. We had some great little flicked in balls behind. Not only that, we had some like quite intricate play around the box. Sometimes you're probably going to say too intricate. We could have finished off a couple of chances a bit earlier, but you know, it's classical Brentford, really. You can't do that. You can't go that mad and expect to get away with it. I mean, do you think you could have got a booking for that? Is that something you can get booked for? Taking a shot was nothing, really, with standing up and essentially inciting however many thousand home fans, especially when you've got a history with the club and with those fans.
We come and we see a game destroyed by one person who wants to be the star of the show. Now, obviously, I'm not going to say that there's corruption involved, because there clearly isn't, but there's certain ineptitude involved, where this guy, Villa knew how to play him. They fell on the floor, they got a free kick every time. Now, are Brentford naive? No, I don't think they are, but we're a good club with good people, good people who follow it and good people who play for us. That's why we love this club. And they're not going to react the way Villa did. If that's what you need to go top of the league, I don't want it. Thanks very much.
There you go, the fans, what they had to say about the main game and also about kind of Ollie Watkins' activity. Ollie Watkins, listen, I know a lot of people say, you're dead to me. You know, they equate him to Martin Rowlands, which I think is a bit strong, actually, because Martin Rowlands is quite bad. There's a difference between sort of, you know, what Ollie Watkins did, and we've seen it. We'll talk about that in a little bit, as to what exactly happened. I'll say what exactly happened is that, you know, when we saw Ollie Watkins celebrate, and it looked quite bad, because tell you what made it worse is that he started pointing, and I remember people around us going, he's pointing at one person, isn't he? He's pointing at one person. Then the word went around, goes, it must have been something racist. Somebody must have said something racist. And there's all these words that are going around. But then the worst thing is that all his teammates came in, including Konza, who was at Brentford for 30 seconds, you know, blinking at them, and he missed him, and he never wanted to be at Brentford anymore, used that as an opportunity to start goading everybody as well. So they all piled in. So, and also, that obviously, they were doing this sort of kind of dark arts thing before that, as well. So people weren't happy with them because it almost like Ollie's giving them an excuse for them all to kind of abuse us. And they weren't necessarily pointing at one person. They were like kind of pointing at everyone, like, going, yeah, there you go, stick out you, Brentford. So that was really, really annoying. But what happened is that, obviously, and you'll check it out on the post-match podcast, prideofwest.london. Immediately, I'd gone down during the match as well, and I went down to the area where Ollie was pointing at, and I just did the old investigation, turned around to a few characters and said, so what's going on here then? You know, why was Ollie pointing at, you know, pointing like that? And one guy, you know, young lad said to me, this guy, and he pointed to me in front of me, he goes, he was basically abusing Ollie Watkins for a lot of the game, or a lot of a period of time. And then when Ollie Watkins scored, he basically came back and he gave it back to the bloke. So he had confirmed what Ollie Watkins said before the statement came out, before anything came out, and actually put it on the post-match podcast. And I was a little bit like, okay, fair enough, you know, not be funny, mate. You know, why were you abusing Watkins? You know, he's like, you know, he's initially one of us, and I know he's opposition player, but there's kind of ways about going about doing things. But for me, I was actually kind of a little bit kind of relieved that there was actually no racial incident that had gone down at all. But so, looking at that, going back and explaining to people around me, I said, like, you know, Ollie was basically pointing at one person. People started to kind of understand a little bit more. Not saying it was right or wrong, but they understood it a little bit more. However, when you're doing that, everyone in the stadium, all they can see you is pointing at the home fans, right? And then all your teammates coming over and giving it large, okay? And that's when he completely fluffed it. And I think that Ollie knows that he fluffed it, because you could even see him, and he said in his post-match, oh, I'll do it again. And it's kind of like, you know, they're probably, you know, listen, we're not condoning the guy that did that at all. You know, to be honest, at the end of the day, it's a bit of a stupid thing to do. And it's a bit of an out-of-order thing to do. But at the end of the day, as people say, you know, people abuse Malcape, people abuse, you know, Visa, people abuse Mbumo, you know what I'm saying? And they do it in a particular type of way. And, you know, it's not saying it's right or it's wrong, but that's kind of what happened, okay? And he could have dealt with it maybe in a different way, where he'll turn around and said, look, I decided not to celebrate, but at the end of the day, the guy that abused me, at the end of the day, mate, you know, I've just got to show you that I'm bigger than that, or I'm better than that. But he chose his way to deal with it, and it's really backfired on him. And I think that he's going to be absolutely gutted. I went back to the pub afterwards, and I met a family. They listened to this podcast. Hope you listen to it. Mum and a dad and the two daughters, two young daughters. And the mum said to me, my daughters are devastated, because Ollie Watkins was their favourite player, and they were so looking forward to him coming back, and him doing that, and then the crowds singing that they're singing against him and everything like that. They're absolutely devastated. And all of a sudden, it's like, you know, when you talk about, you know, people being kind of role models and heroes, you know, you don't realise how much these things are important to so many other people. Forget about us, you know what I'm saying, but forget about the people who are, you know, 10, 12, 15, 18, 20 years old, who have looked up and respected you, and the amount of Brentford fans that have followed him wherever he's gone, because he was the player when they were younger, they followed them. So for him, he's kind of destroyed that for some people. And for that, I think that's going to make him really upset. Personally, I still like Ollie Watkins. I think he's a nice guy. He's made a bit of a mistake. He's fluffed it a little bit. But I know other Brentford fans will feel completely differently.
Well, I think this is a case of two idiots, isn't it? I mean, the idiot, the Brentford fan, you know, why would you want to be abusing Ollie Watkins? I mean, Ollie, you know, I'm not going to get into what Ollie Watkins has done for us. I think it's a mutually beneficial relationship. He was good for us, we were good for him. You know, I'm not gonna get into a character assassination of, you know, he froze at Wembley, he didn't come up with us, he'd already gone by the time we got to the Premier League. But he was part of that stepping stone. I don't understand why anyone, or anything that Ollie Watkins has done at Brentford, in a Brentford shirt or since, would make you abuse him. Sat in the third, fourth, fifth row of the game, standing there screaming abuse at him. What rational Brentford fan would do that, for a start? That's the one thing. And then what rational Brentford, ex-Brentford player would jeopardise? And he must know that. You know, he could have done anything after scoring that goal. And when I saw he'd scored, I just thought, oh no, don't celebrate. And not only did he celebrate, it just got a bit warped after that. You know, him running down the other end of the pitch would have been bad enough, you know, even and you know, shirt off and all that. You know, if he'd have done that would have been quite bad.
Talking of Martin Rowlands, yeah.
Yeah. you know, and he just lost it for a moment. And I just don't, whatever was said must have been bad, but who knows, you know, regardless. You just you know, enjoy the moment. You've scored another goal. He's having an incredible season. He's scoring lots of goals for Villa. You know, he's almost certainly going to be part of the Euro squad if this carries on. It's just a really bad taste moment, and it didn't need to happen. So, yeah, you've got a question, why on earth a Brentford fan is giving him abuse before the incident happened? And then just their reaction to that. And as you rightly explained, it was that sparked all the other Villa players piling in. And that's when it kind of, it became a celebration against the home end, which, you know, it just ratcheted up the atmosphere and the bad vibe. And then, you know, unfortunately, the insults that came after Ollie, I'm unfortunate, but not necessarily, you know, unpredictable. It's just a sad end, really, and he's brought it, a lot of it, on himself. Yeah, you got the idiot, you know, giving him grief, but I don't think one person warrants what he did after that. So yeah, you know, Watkins, you've let yourself down, mate.
Right, and it's going to be interesting because, you know, the Villa fans saying, you know, when you come to Villa next time, are we going to give you a warm reception and all this kind of stuff? And Brentford and Villa have never really, even though they gave us all that beef before, there was nothing any between us because, you know, we were Brentford and they were Villa. So we just go there and beat them, and then they get upset and then we go home. You know what I'm saying? So there's never that. But all of a sudden, now we've got this scenario, which is probably a bit bizarre. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's probably sort of moving into the sort of kind of Brentford, sort of kind of 1990s Brentford, Birmingham City territory. Not quite there yet at all, where we had this kind of really strange kind of relationship with Birmingham City, where we both absolutely hated each other. And every time you go there, it's like complete fireworks. You know, when they came down to us, it's complete fireworks, and they used to smash the place up and all sorts of stuff. Like, and I'm not saying we got to that stage as well, but now we've got this really weird scenario where Villa obviously are going to really want to give it to us. Brentford are going to really want to give it to them. Our fans are going to go up there. It's going to be quite sort of tetchy. They're going to have 40,000 fans. We're going to have 3,000 fans. So it could be quite interesting, like, you know. And just coming back to talking about Martin Rowlands, I thought I have to mention the Martin Rowlands because we said that, you know, it's a parallel to Martin Rowlands, who was an absolute hero at Brentford. You know, this is again, if you know your history stuff, like, you know what I'm saying, absolute hero at Brentford. We loved him. He even got his own song, Martin, you know, we got Martin Rowlands. He's got Tony Follin out wide. His own song, and then he decides to go to QPR, scores against us, kisses his badge. But the worst one, that was bad, but the worst one was when he played for Leyton Orient. Martin Rowlands played for Leyton Orient, and they were top of the league in that season where I think we ended up going up that season as well, because we were top of the league, and they ended up beating us 2-0. He scored the second goal in the end in front of his own fans. And what he did is that he turned around and ran the length of the pitch to basically the equivalent of the West Stand, the old Ealing Road stand as well, where we were all standing. He ran the length of his pitch, and he was pointing at his badge as he's running the length of the pitch. They started kissing the badge and stood in front of the fans and just started kissing his badge and pointing towards it. And I was thinking, you absolute nutter. What are you doing this for? But he made an absolute point of basically saying, I'm going to score a goal. I'm going to run down to the other end, and I'm going to completely wind you up. And after that, Martin Rowlands could not set foot anywhere in the TWA area at all. You can't equate Ollie Watkins to that, can you, Laney?
No, he's not that idiotic. No, but you know, but it's amplified. I mean, that was League One, and this is the Premier League. You know, every little incident is magnified, and you know, you can't, especially with VAR and everything, you can't get away with anything anymore. You literally can't. If you do something on the pitch, you're going to get spotted. It's going to be reported on. Social media wasn't like it was like now, when Rowlands did that. And you know, it was what Watkins did was on a different level in terms of exposure. So yeah, no, I don't think it was as big a disrespect, because it really did start off as a point to prove to one person. But you know, it sparked bigger kerfuffle, and then, you know, it was just one of the most ill-tempered games I can remember, which isn't in itself a bad thing, because those kind of feisty games are games that we all love, to be honest with you. You know, I don't you don't want to see people getting hurt, but you know, players squaring up to each other, it's, you know, brawls and stuff like that. It's not great, but it's not, you know, when a commentator say, oh, no one wants to see this, I'm saying, well, hold on a minute, you know, I quite like to see it sometimes, mate, you know what I mean? It's just like those kind of games need to happen. It's like that raw passion and two sets of players that just want to give it all and go toe-to-toe. Sometimes it's the game needs that, and sometimes it sparks the game into life and you get more goals. But yeah, there was, you know, the sendings off and just the brawls, and both sets of players or both clubs have been held to account, and they're both going to, you know, they're probably going to get fined for not controlling their players. So, you know, the authorities have got involved, and the authorities, I'm not saying those later kerfuffles and fights wouldn't have happened, but I think it was the Watkins incident that certainly led to the Neil Maupay shithousery with Buendia, Martinez.
What happened?
So Villa almost scored an own goal. There was a back pass that was overhit, and it looked like it was about to go in. I think it just went wide, or the goalkeeper got a touch and it went wide. So we had a corner. Maupay was running towards where the ball had gone out, just behind, just to the, as we were looking at it, at the left of the goal, and he just shoulder barged Martinez, and who went down like the proverbial sack of shit, and it was quite a hefty shoulder to shoulder, but he certainly made the most of it, and he was looking for the referee, and he was looking, had everyone seen what happened, and Maupay just like literally laughed in his face, and we got the corner, and nothing came of that, and then later on, Maupay went down theatrically, just taking the piss, and Martinez, he grabbed him by the collar and trying to manhandle him off the floor, which I think he got a book for in the end. But what actually that sparks the touchline fight, which ended up with one of the Villa players being sent off. So
he did his job.
You can't, yeah. I mean, yeah, you know,
cheating tough way.
I wish Maupay would score more goals and less of that at the moment, but yeah, he certainly serves his purpose in other ways sometimes. But yeah, I mean, it was a game that we'll never forget, let's put it that way. There's so many games that come and go, and you kind of have to kind of remember, oh, what was the score in that one? But this one we'll remember for a long time for lots of reasons. So yeah, I just wish I think we deserve to get a point out of that. I think a defeat was pretty harsh, but that's the way it's going at the moment.
Well, and again, we're saying that. I mean, we thought that we were very much in command of that game as well, until Ben Mee got sent off. And, you know, ironically, they scored two goals from, if I remember right, they scored two goals from headers as well. You know, you can argue the fact that, you know, Mee, who literally throws his body behind the ball, was inside there managing that defence. Maybe those situations may not have happened and it would have been different. But, you know, it's like one of those things, you know, you can go on and on and on. From an XG perspective, and we said we've got the Bees breakdown posse, they're having a good old Christmas break now. So we decided to let them off today, and we'll just actually throw a few of these stats ourselves your way. 0.51 XG to Brentford to 1.42. So they made a lot more. I mean, we didn't create that many chances. I mean, we scored the goal that we scored as well. I haven't checked out the exact XG on that goal as well, but it was a fairly low opportunity chance as well. I mean, he took it really well. He had players in front of him sort of kind of blocking him. That could have been blocked at any stage. And like I said, your ball went in the back of the net. But Villa, I think after they went off, they created quite a few opportunities as well, and obviously took two of them very well. So that was actually very, very disappointing. Just coming back to that game as well, just finally as well, Laney, the referee. There's a lot of unhappiness with the referee, and there's been a lot of unhappiness with referee, and we can go on and talk about referees till the cows come home, but there's an argument to say that the referee really lost it in this game. He actually completely lost control, and that is also part of the reason why it all kind of kicked off, players got sending off, there was all sorts of brawling and stuff going on, don't you think?
Yes, I think it was the consensus that the referee lost the respect of the players, he lost his authority in the first half. There was a big penalty call where Ben Mee was kind of wrestled to the ground. I thought it was a penalty.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot.
we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Because of, you know, where we stand is we had a perfect view of him being wrestled to the floor. There was arms around his neck. Whether, you know, the scuffle or the exchange was even to start with, when we're both pulling each other, regardless of that, it ended with an absolute foul. You know, that he was both hands around his shoulders and his neck, and he was dragged to the floor. That's a foul in anyone's book, and it being a penalty area was a penalty. Referee, it went to VAR, I think, or didn't go to VAR. I can't remember if it went to VAR or not. But the referee wasn't interested. And I think Villa realised that they could get away with a fair amount after that. And they did. And McGinn, in particular, was a whinging little shitbag. And he wasn't having it his own way. And I spoke to my Villa fans, Villa friends afterwards, about him, and he said he's used to kind of just bossing that midfield where he gets the ball and he's that quarterback kind of role. He turns, he's got a good turn on him, and he's got a big arse on him. That's that what they said. And what he does, he kind of backs into the opposition, and he kind of manufactures like fouls. He gets contact where players will kind of jostle him, and he'll go down. And he wasn't getting those decisions, and they said we did really well. We got two players on him, and whatever way he turned, there was a player there to kind of nick the ball off of him, or challenge him, or put a little bit of a late one in on him. Not a malicious fouls, but he wasn't getting it his own way, and he was getting really stroppy. You could see it, and he, being the captain, he was able to speak to the ref, and it looked like he was in his ear the whole game, and it looked like he was influencing the referee's decisions. And you know, it became the second half in particular. I couldn't believe that the referee hadn't given them any bookings at all. For fouls, you know, some of them were pretty, you know, pretty professional fouls. And then we started picking up a foul every time we touched the ball, it seemed. It was a very, very one-sided and very odd refereeing performance. And I certainly feel that the referee did lose his authority in that first half. And it didn't spark everything, but it contributed, I feel, for sure.
Yeah, and just looking at the game, you know, for Brentford, their strengths, they stole the ball from Aston Villa quite a lot as well, and basically our weakness, we were aggressive and we were caught offside often. Okay, Aston Villa, they were effective at creating goal-scoring opportunities from the flanks as well as from set pieces, and they were strong at finishing. They were also aggressive. Their top players, according to WhoScored.com, were Ollie Watkins and Moreno as well. So Ollie Watkins at the top, then Moreno as well. Then we had Keenan Potter and Damsgaard for us, and then we had Diego Carlos for the Villa. Just talking about referees as well, though, you know, saying you're talking about the referee. Tell you what we're going to do. We're going to go over to JB, because JB has got facts and funks. His Christmas, his seasonal facts and funks. And tell you something, you've been talking about referees. I've been talking about referees. JB is also talking about referees in his facts and his funk.
Welcome, Virgil, back again. Aston Villa regularly reappeared in our fixture lists from 2016. Since then, we've had four wins and a draw in our home league meetings. Prior to Sunday, it had been 76 years since Villa had taken all the points from a visit to us. When Ben Mee saw red, it was the first time a Brentford player had ever taken an early bath during any Villa game. It's the first time one of our defenders has been sent off in a home game since Chris Meppham in Thomas Frank's very first game in charge in October 2018. Mead's return game after suspension will be the Forest game, the same as Ivan Toney's. It'll come as no great surprise that our players seeing a total of 6 yellow cards is the highest in our Premier League history, and a combined 10 in the game is equally so. Plus, of course, there were 2 reds. Already this season, there was a combined 8 yellows at Newcastle, which at that stage equaled our previous worst, the 2-2 at Leeds 2 years ago, when there was a last-minute equaliser for the home side. The referee that day was also Mr. Coote. He has now refereed 5 of our Premier League games, which have ended in 2 draws and 3 defeats for us. During these games, he's shown an average of 5 yellow cards for both sides combined. That compares to our Premier League average of 3.2 per match. Back in our original top-tier seasons, manager Harry Curtis had a distinct advantage in the understanding of matchday officials, as before he entered management, he'd been a referee. Alf Kappa was the first ever bee to be sent off in 1922. He was dismissed in a game at Newport by referee Harry Curtis.
So there you go, JB Faxon Funk and Coote. Coote turns up all over the place for referee. Even Harry Curtis is turning up all over the place for referee. You know what I'm saying? It's like, we can get you to referee, Dave. You know, I might referee if we can. We get Thomas Frank to referee. You know, a few matches out there as well. Like, you know, we'll see how it goes. But anyway, listen, we're going to move on from that Villa game. You know, it's going to go in the annals of history. And like I said, we look forward to the return game in probably sort of March or April next year, where we'll see if the beef will have kind of sizzled itself in the oven then. It's actually going to get itself a little bit kind of, you know, medium rare, or maybe even kind of a little bit, you know, a little bit well done by that stage, maybe. But anyway, listen, we have got a game on Boxing Day plus one, as we call it. You know, we're going to play Wolverhampton Wanderers. We're going to go away. We're going to have another, I'm going to have a look, another sip of that port. Laney's port, actually. Laney told us about his port. You got it from M&S. Very, very nice port, actually. So it went very well with the cheese. We're going to have a little sip of port. We're going to come back and we're going to talk about the Wolves. Wolverhampton Wanderers coming down to New Griffin Park. And it's interesting, we're talking about the sort of games that you never forget. And Wolves came down that time, and there's a drone. I think it's the first game that we played against them, and there was a drone up in the sky. Wolverhampton Wanderers game at New Griffin Park, first season. And did the game get stopped? I think the game was stopped. Yeah, the game got stopped because there's a drone in the sky. I mean, how bizarre was that? You know, there was that sort of drone gate. There was quite a few sort of drone incidents then. And we don't know. We think that somebody might have been flying it from maybe from the new flats or something like that. And you just never know what they could be sort of kind of dropping, or were they doing it to sort of kind of for legal betting incidents. I don't know anything like that. But that was actually really bizarre. I'm sure there's a helicopter that came over as well at some stage in that game as well, wasn't it?
Second, it was a weird one, wasn't it? It was there was a clash of heads with Rico and Matty Jensen, wasn't there? And then the drone, the players went off, and then there was a refereeing, communications malfunction, and the second half was delayed, and then there was a helicopter that hovered over the West End for pretty much, 15-20 minutes, so it's obviously something to do with the drone. We were doing all right up until that incident, and I think probably the disruption, you know, caused us to drop points.
Like the Villa game,
yeah. We're doing all right until some pesky kid comes along and ruins it for everyone. But yeah, there's lots of games where we're doing all right until something happens. And we haven't beaten Wolves, have we, at our place? We beat them away. That was the first away win of being in the Prem, I think, wasn't it?
That's right.
I think
Ivan Toney.
We need to do them at our place, don't we?
Yeah, we do need to do that at our place. And just actually going to cast your mind as well, I've done a review. I do reviews in the Observer newspaper as well. So if you've got a firm copy of Observer newspaper, just go in there and check the Premier League fans' reviews. It's like the half-term reviews as well. It's also online, I think, on guardian.co.uk as well. And if you could just go and check the half-term reviews, all the fans from Arsenal to, you know, Bournemouth, Brentford, you know, Luton and everyone inside there as well. And like I said to you, I put the Brentford half-term report saying how happy or unhappy I was with us and the manager. And also it asked a question about VAR, which we talked about, like I said to you, in the Aston Villa section as well. Do you get rid of it? Do you tweak it? Or do you keep it as well? And I just put my little comment in there saying I think that it needs to be tweaked. you know. But go and check it out. It needs to be tweaked, because at the end of the day, it's like, I think there's too many decisions have been used for VAR. And at the end of the day, I think we should, if somebody makes a mistake, and if a referee makes a mistake, let him make a mistake over those little decisions. I think the bigger decisions are the one that we need VAR for, and they need to be made very, very quickly. But no one needs a shoelace offside, because VAR was initially used to stop goal hanging, right? And goal hanging was when somebody used to hang out in the goal, which is like very, very far away from where the ball is normally being played. And it's been adapted, which I understand, but at the end of the day, I just think it's been completely and utterly over adapted, and you don't need it. It doesn't really matter if somebody is a shoelace offside. It's not going to affect the game. But we shall move on from that. Like I said, you check it out, or on the Brentford Twitter as well, we put a little thing out on that, the Guardian newspaper, Observer newspaper, half term report for all the Premier League fans. But just coming back to this Wolves game, tell you something, let's go to Wolves and let's find out what they have to say about their team. We got Dave from Talking Wolves. He's going to give us the lowdown on Wolverhampton Wanderers.
Hi folks, this is Dave from Talking Wolves. Obviously giving my thoughts ahead of this the fixture, Brentford versus Wolves. Obviously with the games coming thick and fast with the Christmas period, it's going to be interesting to see how Wolves line up and how Brentford line up, obviously, in regards to the quality of the football with the players having so many fixtures and whether the teams will rotate. But yeah, so far for Wolves this season, I think if you if you go back to August and you offered Wolves fans to be sitting in 11th place on Christmas Day, I think we would have been more than happy. We would have taken that. We had such a strange scenario in the summer where Julen Lopetegui, who's in charge at the club, sort of kicked up a little bit of a fuss about the money and the finances, because basically he was told at the end of last season that the club were going to tighten the purse strings, and he didn't really like that. He gave the board and the club an opportunity to see how things started in pre-season, and we had a really strong pre-season, but we didn't bring many players in. And 2 weeks before the season, he told the club he wanted to leave. He wasn't happy. Wolves obviously ended up sorting that out with him. And on about 4 days' notice before the start of the Premier League season, that's when Gary O'Neill came in. So I think, considering the situation that Wolves were in right at the start of the campaign, we're actually doing okay. That's a word I keep using, really, okay, because there have been some fantastic wins. You know, most recently, Christmas Eve game, beating Chelsea, we've beaten Manchester City, we've beaten Tottenham, all at home. But the concern is that we're losing and we're dropping points away from home. We've drawn to Luton, we lost to Sheffield United, we lost to Palace towards the start of the season away. Most recently, we lost to West Ham quite heavily away. So that's really, Wolves have got to try and find that balance between the home form and the away form. But in regards to where we are right now, I'm satisfied, I'm happy with where we are. But obviously, there's still so much room for improvement, really. So I'm really happy, obviously, with the more recent results against Chelsea. But in terms of the quality of football, there's still room for improvement there for Wolves. The sort of, obviously, Gary O'Neill was an interesting appointment as well, to talk about him again. When Lopetegui was going to be moving on, I don't think any Wolves fans would have given you Gary O'Neill as an option to come in. But saying that, when you look at the available managers at the time, managers like Graham Potter are always going to get mentioned. But I think that's probably a little bit of a stretch too far for Wolves. And plus, obviously, with the situation that we're in, it wasn't an ideal situation. Managers looked at Wolves and would have thought, you know what, on a few days' notice, no pre-season, a lot of neutrals predicting Wolves to struggle, this is going to be a very difficult job. And I understand that there was managers like Frank Lampard and so on being interviewed, but Gary O'Neill was the best. And he has impressed us. He's got the morale and everything behind the scenes to a much better level than where it was. And in terms of goal scoring as well for Wolves, we're in a fantastic place in terms of scoring goals. Ignoring obviously West Ham last week, we scored in every Premier League game since game week two. Which is fantastic. And I think in terms of home games now, we're stemming back to when Lopetegui took over. In terms of home games, we're on a really good, strong run of form, scoring at home as well. So that's been a real bonus, because Nuno struggled in his final season, Bruno Lage struggled, and Lopetegui struggled to get us consistently scoring goals. So that is, huge props to Gary O'Neill for sorting that out. And, he's still a young manager, still got lots to learn. There are still moments throughout games that you can sort of tell he's an inexperienced head coach, but he switched on. If you listen to him, he understands, he knows what he's talking about. You know, we've seen him on Sky TV, which he got a lot of praise for, and he's just got to now back that up with putting in better and positive results and getting positive and positive performances, sorry, and getting positive results on the pitch as well. In terms of the Wolves squad, it's good. It's okay. It's where it needs to be, I think, in terms of the quality. I think there's good depth. The first time in a while, there's been some, well, I say good depth. In a lot of areas, there's good depth. But it's almost a little bit of a transitional season in terms of personnel for Wolves. And I felt like I've said that the last couple of years, because when Nuno left, it was always going to be a big shift. And Bruno Lage came in, and that felt like a transitional season. And then when he left, the year after Lopetegui came in, and that almost felt like a transitional season as well. So under Gary O'Neill, it very much is one of those. But Wolves now have been sort of stung too many times by the Portuguese players that Jorge Mendes was recommending to the club. And look, it was a huge help to us in regards to getting out of the Championship and in regards to us being a stable Premier League team. You know, I can't deny that Jorge Mendes and his agency, Gestifutes, were a huge part of to help us where we are. But saying that, there's players such as Fabio Silva, who I do like Fabio, but it's just not worked out for him at Wolves. We spent over 35 million on him. Gonçalo Guedes, last summer we spent 40 million on him. He lasted 6 months and he's moved on already. And we will definitely lose money on him. He's out on loan at the moment. So Wolves have sort of tried to shift away from that in terms of a recruitment policy. And so looking at the squad now, we are seeing, you know, we brought in under Lopetegui at the start Premier League players or players with Premier League experience like Mario Lemina, like Craig Dawson. And I think they were a huge boost and ultimately kept us in the Premier League last season. So this season is good. I think, like I said earlier, in terms of the attacking threat, it's much better. But then there are one or two, you take one or two pieces out of the puzzle and it's, you can see Wolves looking very disjointed. Like Pedro Neto, I believe he's been injured now since end of October, and he's still top of the assist charts in the Premier League, which shows how good he's been. He was meant to be back to the game against Chelsea, but still was absent. So he may well be returning the squad for the Brentford game. But he was a huge player for us, and he will be when he returns. And I think he'll add even more to this squad, because we have dropped a few poor performances recently. Ryan Aitnori is the left wing back. You know, he'd been injured for a little while and we sort of struggled without him. And then he returned yesterday against Chelsea, and I thought he was a massive boost in terms of how we were going forward. But so, you know, you take those pieces out and Wolves do struggle a little bit. So I think that's where the recruitment will have to look at in January in terms of attacking players, in terms of wide players, players that have got real pace and can drive the ball forward, because that's what Wolves have really missed under Pedro Neto. In terms of, you know, looking at the wider Premier League, in terms of teams I expect to be in trouble, I think the bottom three currently are down there, but they still keep picking up results, to be honest. I think, obviously, Luton are doing really well. I say that, they're doing a lot better than I think a lot of people expected. Sheffield United as well, and Burnley. But, like I said, they're still getting some half-decent results. Forest could be down there. I don't think the Nuno appointment's a bad one. But I would say out of those four, I think three of them would go down, to be honest. But it'd be fantastic to see Luton do stay up, to be fair to them. But I just don't think, you know, across a whole season, have they got that quality to compete consistently? I don't think so. In terms of Brentford, you know, you guys are a stable Premier League team now. You know, it's just sort of one of those. And I don't mean this in a disrespectful way, but I don't think anyone is expecting, you know, start of the season, no one was expecting Brentford to go down, but no one was really expecting Brentford to knock on the door for European football. And I suppose you could take that as a compliment, because, you know, it shows how far Brentford have come in such a short space of time and how well you're coping without Ivan Toney. I think that's a huge bonus to you guys. You know, if he can come back in and whenever he's back available and kick on and be in the same sort of form that he was in last season, and you keep him, obviously, until the summer, I think that's going to be a big boost to Brentford. Because, obviously, you have been dropping little points here and there, but I still think, you know, you're in a comfortable position. And some of the players have stepped up. I think Brian Mbeumo is, obviously, a big one for you guys. I believe he might be injured. He would have been the one I think I would have picked out. So, I don't know. I think, you know, Brentford are, I've got some quality. I think the back line, you know, you've got some good leaders in that squad as well. And Thomas Frank, you know, has really shown up and, you know, really strengthened in regards, you know, Brentford now, like I said earlier, a stable, established, you couldn't say established Premier League team now. I think another year or so, you can definitely say Brentford are an established Premier League team. And I think a lot of people, when you boys came up, were expecting to go straight back down. So credit to the squad, credit to the fans, obviously, for backing the team. And obviously, credit to Thomas Frank as well, who I'm sure if... I am surprised, you know, the more big jobs that he's not linked with them, to be honest. And I think that shows a good sign of loyalty towards Brentford as well. Looking ahead at the game, though, I'm concerned in regards to Wolves away form. But it ultimately depends on how Brentford play. I think what Wolves like to do is allow the other team to have a lot of the ball, sit deep and try and launch counter-attacks. And that's where we take advantage. It happened against Chelsea this week at home, and ultimately it worked. Whereas last week against West Ham, although we were away, West Ham allowed us to have a lot of the ball, sat really deep. And that meant Wolves' defensive line creeped high, and that's how West Ham got us, stung us with three clinical counter-attacks, with our mistakes in there as well, and that's what we need to sort of get rid of. But I think it's going to be a tricky game. I would probably take a point, considering we beat Chelsea as well. I think a point on the road against Brentford is going to be a welcome point to add to our tally. If not, I think it'll be a goal either way. I don't think either side will run away with it. Both teams have had an okay season. I think both sets of fans will look at this game and think we can get something out of it, but both sets of fans will probably want to be slightly higher in the table as well. So yeah, I think a goal either way, if not 1-1, I'll take every day of the week. And obviously we'll see you boys again in the FA Cup in a couple of weeks' time. But yeah, I appreciate you guys having me. Like I said, my name's Dave from the Talking Wolves podcast, and we've got you guys coming on our match preview as well. But apart from this game and apart from the FA Cup third round, guys, all the best for the rest of the season. And yeah, thanks for having me.
So there you go, Dave from Talking Wolves. Obviously very, very happy because they take a leaf out of our book and they beat Chelsea, just like we beat Chelsea. So after they beat Chelsea, they're very happy, just like we were very happy. But the difficulty is they're going to come into the Brentford game feeling very buoyed by the fact they just beaten Chelsea and we've had a week off having some Christmas pudding. But we'll sort of see, because obviously we'll have some players come back. And I think the big questions now for us is who is back, who is not back, who's going to play, who's not going to play. Because I did a feature on Dave's Talking with Wolves podcast, and to be honest with you, I struggled a little bit as to who's going to be playing in our team, because you don't know who's going to be back, you don't know who's still injured, you don't know if you've got enough defenders to go, you know, four at the back, you know, as we normally play against Wolves. So do we have to go three at the back, stroke five at the back, because just of the players that we've got? I don't know. Obviously, first of all, Laney, there is no Ben Mee, which is a bit of a shame, because it's almost like really weird, because Ben Mee has become almost like a sub defender for us. He's off the bench defender because of his injuries, and he's been out, and you've got Nathan Collins who's coming in almost like taking his place. But now that he's come back, you'll think, oh, this is great, we've got a sub defender coming back, but he's a good defender. And now he's out on a red card, and now you're thinking, God, who's going to fill his place? Because yeah, okay, Nathan Collins has just come back in, he's just been off of injury, but you've got Ethan Pinnock and Nathan Collins, okay, who would probably play two at the back. But then who goes at right back? Do you put Rosdev at right back? Do you put Godos at left back? Or do you, you know, or what do? Or do you decide to go three at the back and decide to put Zanka in there as well and play with the wing backs? This is a little bit of a kind of, maybe a bit of a dilemma for Thomas Frank, or maybe it's not.
Yeah, it's unfortunate just when you're getting your players back, you know, to fitness. You don't really want one back, they're fit, and then one going out because they're suspended. But that just seems the way we're going. We do miss Mee, his organisation, his positional sense, and the way he kind of arranges and encourages the younger players around him. You know, he's proved he's worth his weight in gold. So, yeah, he is a miss, but, you know, we have got Collins coming back. I guess that's the saving grace there. You're going to lose one and get one back there. And hopefully there's no more injuries in our defence, because, you know, if we don't really want to go any kind of deeper into the squad than that. So he's going to miss a couple of games, isn't he? Is it two or three?
straight red, wasn't it?
He's not back until, as JB said, he's not back until the Ivan Toney game, the Nottingham Forest game. So he's not back until the 20th of January. So he's out for a good period of time.
Yeah. So I'm, you know, there is a plus side to that. He's rested, but you know, the minus side is that we'd prefer him to be in, you know, contention for a start. Let's be honest. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how we do set up tomorrow. I mean, I'm reading between the lines and reading, you know, the Brentford website page and their Twitter. It looks like Jensen's coming straight back into that team, and so we've got to work out how we set up our midfield.
I'm going to ask a question just quickly. Do you think, because obviously, like I said to you, know we've got, I mean, we've talked about the defence, right? So let's move into midfield now. Obviously, we've got Norgaard. You know, we've got Damsgaard who's been coming in and he's been actually doing quite a few, you know, good things and sort of kind of some really interesting, incisive plays when he's played as well. But he's in and out, Damsgaard. Do you think with Jensen being out for so long, he's going to come straight back in the side? Or do you think we're going to put him on the bench and bring him on?
I think he comes straight back, personally, because he's having that good a season. It depends. I mean, I don't think we bring players back if they're just about fit. I don't think we risk it because, you know, you can regress and you lose him for even longer. So I think he's, you know, match fit. He wouldn't be starting or he wouldn't be, you know, back in the team if he wasn't, you know, 100%. So if he is 100%, I think he starts. But you're right, you know, I think Damsgaard's proved that he's come on and had an impact, whether he's a 90-minute player, maybe he's the one that you have as a sub. But you need to work out how you work out a midfield with Jensen and Damsgaard and Norgaard Yenelt. It's getting that mixture of the defence and the creative mix just right. I'd say that Godos is probably going to be at left, and Big Game Mads will be at right, you know, wing backs. So I don't think we're going to have Yenel playing in a sort of an out and out defensive role. So there's no way that we're gonna drop Yenel. So it's working out. It's a better problem for Thomas Frank to work out how you get that blend in the middle. But it's not actually a problem. It's just having all your players available. We're not quite used to it.
Yeah, and obviously Wiese and KLP looks like they're going to be up front as well, as we do. Like I said to you, you're going for the Roslev and the Godos combination, which, like I said to you, is something, you know, like I said, you're going 3-5 at the back. We normally go 4-3-3 against sides. Again, this is not disrespect to Wolves, but we just play differently against different sides. But it looks like we might flip it up in this game just because of the personnel that we've got available. So I think it's going to be really, really interesting. I mean, Wolverhampton Wanderers, you know, they've got, you know, Neto, they've got Cunha, you know, they've got Chan, who's been scoring, you know, it's 8 goals this season. You know, it's a good player, like, you know, and then Mario Lemina as well in the CDM. Who's going to be interesting to see, you know, who's going to be in the battle of the midfielders, like I'm saying, who's going to be able to control that midfield. So look, they've got some really good players, they've got a good manager as well, you know, I respect their manager, which is all good. But listen, you know, again, it comes down to the fact that we've had a break, they haven't had a break, they've had the Chelsea game, you know, we've got players coming back, you know, if Jensen plays, it's going to be a massive difference. So I'm going to come around to you, Lainey, and I'm going to ask you, what do you reckon, what's the score prediction?
It's going to be a real toughie, mate. I've got a lot of respect for Wolves, the way they play. Gary O'Neill, as you mentioned, he's a top boy. It's going to be really, really tough, I think. They're probably favourites. My head is saying they're going to beat us, but I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw.
And you've gone for my 1-1 as well. I was on the Balls podcast, Talking Balls, and I said 1-1 as well. I'll be happy with a 1-1 draw because I think we just need to eke out results until the Ivan Toney period when he comes back. And it's going to be a big bang day, that. You know, me coming back, Toney coming back. I think we'll have all sorts of players back by then. So, and we'll just be after it.
Need to start getting points again, mate. As you said, you just need to get those points ticking over again. You know, three more defeats on the trot, it's not great sometimes.
No, it's not. But you know, like I said to you, it's a 9-month season, Lainey. It's a marathon, not a sprint.
I have to remember that one. Yeah,
that's right, which is all good. But listen, this is the Besotted Pride of West London podcast. Thank you for buying us a beer, besotted.com/beer. Thank you for everybody for your Christmas cheer and everything like that as well. We look forward to seeing you either in the boozer. I think we're going to start off in Richmond. We might go Ted Lasso style on Tuesday, Boxing Day plus one. Today's Tuesday, but I'm talking about Wednesday's Boxing Day plus one, isn't it? So yes. I think Paul Buckle, the old ex-Brentford player as well, you know, he is going to be coming out, and I think he's going to be out having a few drinks with us before the match. Like I said, the ex-Bees player. So we're looking forward to having a few drinks with the Buckle on Boxing Day plus one. And like I said to you, then we've got the Palace game, which we'll try and talk about in a few days after that as well. But like I said to you, my name's Billy Grant, and I've had a good Christmas cheer, and I've got Lenny in the place.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you too. Enjoy your day at Chertsey. I'll enjoy my day with my shed down there as well, Laney. And we shall catch you in the Balls game before the boozer. Someone, as you say, before the in Richmond, or you got
to
go down to the Globe, as we say. Come on, you bees. Let's be the Wolves.
Have some more port.
Yes.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.